Good afternoon. Welcome at the first meeting of the Audit Committee. The first item on the agenda will be election of the Chair, and I'll pass over to Mr Laurie.
Thank you. Good afternoon, members. As I think you're all aware, the Standing Orders have provision for an independent Chair for the Audit Committee. We have advertised for an independent Chair, and I hope to bring a report forward to the Council in August with a recommendation in that regard. In the interim, it's necessary to appoint a Chair from within the body of elected members at the committee. That cannot be a member of the executive. So with that in mind, could I ask for a nomination?
I'd like to nominate Councillor Parry.
A seconder for that?
Sorry, Chair. I think for continuity, I'm quite happy to nominate Councillor Smale.
Looking for a seconder for either of these proposals?
Could I second Councillor Smale?
And do I have a seconder for Councillor Parry? Okay, Councillor Smale, you want to take the chair?
Thank you all for voting me back to this familiar position, and welcome to the meeting of the Audit Committee. First of all, we have the apologies for members unable to attend.
Apologies from the external auditors.
Chair, just by way of explanation, the external auditors would normally be at this meeting. Unfortunately, in setting up the original schedule of meetings post the election, there was, I think, a miscommunication between the Council and external auditors, and they are unable to attend on this date because of other commitments. So they asked me to pass on their sincere apologies, and we've sorted out the future timetabling issues so that won't recur.
Thank you. Order of business, are there any new business items submitted as urgent? There being none. Are there any declarations of interest? Minutes of previous meeting. These were created and were signed off, but we will see them at some future date.
They went to Council in June.
So they have been concluded and there's no further action required. Thank you. Could we therefore move to the public reports? And we've covered 5.1. Kenneth is going to talk to 5.1.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Just briefly, this report sets out the membership and terms of reference of the Audit Committee. We've already dealt with the appointment of the interim Chair. So really all this we're asking today is the committee notes its membership and the terms of reference as set out in the report.
I take it these terms of reference are now in line with the requirements of Audit Scotland and any other regulatory body?
Yes, indeed. And members that were able to attend the training session with the external auditors last week, the external auditors went through the various aspects of the terms of reference, and certainly they're content that they meet the requirements.
Are there any comments? There being none, let's pass to item 5.2, the internal audit plan. Elaine.
The internal audit plan for 2017-18 was approved by the previous audit committee on the 21st of March, and this is being presented to the new committee today for information. The plan includes coverage of the council's strategic risks and a number of key systems and processes, and is prepared following an assessment of the risk management framework, a review of risk registers, performance management information and any national and local issues, and also from input from senior management. The plan's fluid and it can be adapted throughout the year in line with the current risks facing the Council. Thank you.
Are there any comments?
Peter, just have one question, and that's in reference 3, and that's under the Named Persons Act, the reference to that. Where are we now with that, with the legislation having to be rethought? Do we actually know how that's going to go forward?
Named Persons Act. Anyone got any knowledge? Kenneth? Grace.
Thank you. So we've been encouraged to continue with the best practice, but the use of named person at this point, until that matter is resolved, we would not be using the named persons. And equally around the sharing of information, that item is still to be resolved. We'll continue with the best practice in terms of our sharing as it stands, making sure that the safeguarding of the child is at the centre, but we're still awaiting further resolution.
So we're all in the dark equally.
It will require a further publication on where we're at nationally, and we've not yet received that. So when all councils receive that, then we would be able to move forward with the implementation.
So looking at your crystal ball, do we have a year before we have to look at the consequences for Midlothian?
Possibly and possibly not, but in terms of the GIRFEC board, so we constantly bring any emerging legislation to that GIRFEC board, and we work together, and the usefulness about that board is NHS partners are also on that board, so we can then share and agree very quickly what our position would be on. So it wouldn't be a big scale job to actually move forward. It's just the use of that terminology, named person, and the protocols around sharing of information.
Perhaps a quick supplementary to Derek's question. There's never, to my mind, been much of it by way of financial provision for the additional duties that members of Midlothian staff would face as a result of this. Has there been any further development of the costs of asking many of our staff in the schools and elsewhere to participate?
So there's some local authorities undertook pilots of, for example, receiving the police concern reports directly to schools. So that indeed has been costed out by those local authorities. We have built that into our under business transformation under the admin review in schools. And Loughfield Primary, just as one primary example, have actually appointed what they call a statutory meeting coordinator. And that's shown us a mechanism where you can really cut down on the amount of teacher time that is required in order to coordinate information from a whole range of services. And that person actually pulls together the young person's plan. So we think in Midlothian we certainly have a position moving forward that we would be able to implement under the admin review.
So we've got a pilot which will indicate the quantum of the issue, but until the full thing is rolled out, we really don't know the total costs. Thank you for that. Derek?
Peter, I have one other question. I'm not sure whether it's for Grace or for the internal auditor, but it's on item 7, and that's the pupil equity funding. There's been some discussions on how that funding would be used and how different schools and that would use that and how that would be controlled. Are we happy that that will be quarter 3 before we would take an internal look through internal audit at that, or would that, being as that's a new funding, it's quite diverse in the way it's going direct to schools, etc. Are we quite happy to wait till sort of quarter 3, or should we be considering bringing that audit forward to make sure that we're in line with the way the government intend us to spend that money?
So the question is about the mechanism for tracing pupil equity funding.
So the position that we're in just now is we will draw down the pupil equity funding in the month of July. All schools have now submitted their plans. Some of those plans went back because we wanted to be really specific about the gap. The issue around the funding, we know that the funding will be used well, but the cabinet paper that we produced on the pupil equity fund was quite clear about both evaluation and impact. I don't think that we would be able to demonstrate the impact of that money until quarter 3, but around the processes we certainly could bring a report back that would demonstrate how, say for example, the New Battle Learning Community, who have pulled all the resources together for their plan, how they're using it compared to maybe a school that's taken a more an approach that's more around their own school setting. So I'd be happy to provide more information about that, but in terms of evaluation and impact, I think it's more likely likely to be able to show that in quarter three. And equally, the Scottish Government are keen that schools build that into their improvement planning cycle. So schools would normally be writing their standards and quality report and placing that in the public domain in September each year. So there would be an initial set of information going up in September around the aims around it, but in terms of the impact of that funding, given that we don't get it until July and the staffing will not be starting until August, it's an argument about would you want a process report or an impact report?
Thanks for that. Can we pass on now to another of our good housekeeping reports, which is 5.3, the Internal Audit Annual Assurance Report. Elaine.
Thank you. The Local Authority Accounts Regulations require that an annual review is undertaken on the effectiveness of the Council's system of internal control, and it includes a statement of this review in the annual governance statement. This report details the results of the review, and it concludes that the Council's framework of governance, risk management and internal control are of a satisfactory standard. But it does raise some actions which have been included in the annual governance statement. These included: the Delivering Good Governance in Local Government framework was updated in 2016, but this has not yet been fully embedded. Draft workforce plans have been developed, but these require updating, and a council-wide plan is required. Although end-of-project post-implementation reviews are completed for some projects, these are required to be completed for all projects. Incident response plans are in place, but these focus heavily on building availability. A business continuity policy has been created, and once approved, training and business continuity plans will be rolled out across the council. A register of interest for council officials requires further development. A standalone gifts and hospitality policy requires to be developed, and the service review of internal audit requires to be concluded, and any changes to the audit plan will need to be approved by the audit committee. The audit committee is therefore invited to provide comment on the annual assurance report, and note that any weaknesses identified will be followed up by internal audit and updates will be provided to the audit committee. Thank you.
So that's a review of what we've been doing in the past year, and you've highlighted the outstanding items which need to be carried forward. Are there any questions? Can we move on to item 5.4, the annual governance statement, which Kenneth is going to talk to, on page 39.
Thank you, Chair. This report provides an assessment of the Council's compliance with its Code of Corporate Governance and invites the Committee to note and indeed comment on the attached draft statement, which is to be included in the financial statements. The Code of Corporate Governance requires that the annual governance statement is prepared on an annual basis, is included in the financial statements, and is authorised by the Leader of the Council and the Chief Executive. And paragraph 2.4 just sets out the process whereby the annual governance statement is developed on an annual basis. The statement itself is in the appendix. It includes an update in respect of the areas for improvement identified in 2015-16 and an analysis of the progress made in that regard. I think the one I pick out there is standing orders at the top of page 47 of the agenda, where the new council has in fact agreed that further work and a further review needs to be undertaken. In relation to the improvements to be progressed in 17-18, these, as you rightly pointed out, Chair, were included in the previous report. And indeed, when we come on later to the Audit Scotland report, the importance of workforce plans is one of the things which is emphasised there. I'm happy to take any questions, Chair.
Perhaps of use to new members, there has been some change in responsibility for detecting fraud. Some functions are now carried out more centrally than they were. We still have a strong role in it set out on page 47. Are you able to comment, Elaine, on what we do and what we don't do?
A lot of the housing benefit fraud resource, all of it was transferred to the DWP, and a lot of councils either transferred to be the staff over or kept the resource in-house. And Midlothian decided to keep the two officers in-house. So we've actually expanded their role, and rather than looking at predominantly it was just looking at housing benefit and council tax benefit in the past, but now we have more of a corporate fraud role for them. So they're still doing the traditional council tax discounts and exemptions, focusing a lot on single person discount, but we're also targeting things like subletting of council houses. And you'll see from the previous report, we've actually got back, I think it's about 8 council houses now, just from purely from the work that these two officers have done. And that results from things like whistleblowing, tip-offs. They've done a presentation to the housing officers, and that resulted in a lot of emails and phone calls from the housing officers saying, this doesn't look right, can you check this out? So that directly resulted in the recovery of these council houses. And you'll see from the previous report that each council house equates to roughly about £93,000 in savings from a combination of homelessness costs, legal costs, and 2 years of future savings. So I think the work they're doing is very beneficial. They also do a lot of work in the National Fraud Initiative, so any matches that come back from that, which don't have the housing benefit element, which are now passed over to DWP, they work on those. And again, a lot of that is SPD, blue badges, things like that. But I think a big emphasis is to try and focus on the prevention side now, so to get out among the officers and the council and managers and just highlight the sort of controls that should be in place, the things they should be looking for, when to contact internal audit or the corporate fraud team. And the office have also been involved in some audits, do some testing, things like accounts payable, looking for duplicate payments, things like that. So the resource is being well used, and I think we've demonstrated that Midlothian are certainly taking the risk of fraud seriously.
So despite the chooping across of the staff, and they're technically not responsible as they were before, they're working well with us, and they're continuing to use national databases to the benefit of Midlothian.
Yes, and I mean, there's still some element of joint working with DWP, and I think in the future there's going to be more of that sort of joint council tax reduction scheme and housing benefit investigations. But I think they're certainly, we're certainly keeping them busy with the type of work that they're now undertaking.
Thank you for that. We have the annual report from the Chair of the Audit Committee, 5.5. I'm happy to answer any questions on it. There are a number of outstanding issues following on from that, such as new buyers and the question of treasury deposits in the more obscure banking institutions. But I suggest we take those up at another time. Next item, 5.6, page 67, the Audit Scotland report on local government. Kenneth.
Yes, thank you, Chair. The purpose of this report is to provide the committee with a summary of the Audit Scotland report, Local Government in Scotland Performance and Challenges 2017. And we've included a link to the report amongst the papers. I mean, I think it's a report that's well worth reading, particularly for members that are new to the Council, just in terms of setting out in fairly stark terms with some interesting council-by-council examples, the challenges and the issues that as a set of elected members and indeed as a set of senior officers will be dealing with over the next number of years. And, amongst other things, Exhibit 4 in the report shows the rate of population change in Midlothian, which is something we've spoken about on a number of occasions, which is a particular challenge for us in this area. So in general, the report sets out the current and future challenges facing councils, something about the progress that is being made by councils in meeting these challenges, and some indications as to perhaps what council should now be doing in order to successfully manage the change and the challenges ahead. It also includes a self-assessment checklist for councillors, which I think some of you will find useful, and some good practice information at the back of the document. And the key messages, and really none of these will be surprising to you, councils have faced very significant challenges from a long-term decline in revenue funding and from an ageing and a growing population. The pace and scale of reform needs to increase in some councils. I think I'd probably argue that it needs to increase in virtually every council. The criticality of setting clear long-term strategies and plans that target effort on priority areas. The fact that within that context, the role of the councillor is increasingly complex, demanding and evolving, and I think that's probably something that's very clear to all of you. And the fact that long-term financial strategies must be in place to ensure that the council is spending in alignment with its priorities. And then what we've done in the report, Chair, at section 3.3, is we've just set out the main recommendations from the report and then put some commentary in, setting out the position of the council in relation to these recommendations. We'll also be taking this report up to the full council meeting next week. Today, the committee is asked to note the Audit Scotland report and the position of Midlothian Council in relation to the report's recommendations.
I can certainly recommend reading this report and printing it off if it's easier for you. Are there questions to this? Derek.
Peter, it's not so much a question, it's maybe an observation. In the messages that they're handing out, they talk about the challenges of revenue funding. I think explained and reasonably well in one of the induction seminars we got for a change. Many years we've had the councils, it's either been revenue strapped and capital rich or vice versa. I think it's fair to say it's not just a revenue problem that we're having no longer, it's a revenue and a capital problem that we have. Actually, in here, the challenge that we're faced with reduced finances and an increased population and an ageing population is one of the biggest we'll get. I think right at the back of that, or working alongside of that, is actually planning our workforce and making sure that we have a workforce that's designed and ready to take on the challenges, because what we're going to be left with and moving towards is aiming all our efforts at the areas that are most in need, and that's going to be with the ageing population, younger people and early interventions. So it's making sure that we have a workforce that can deliver that strategy and we move towards that, and it's about making sure we move there timelessly. I think in some of the report where you read about making sure that our marked improvements, how we're going to have these marked improvements with a very, very, very limited budget defies me. I think it's a big challenge.
I think we all recognise the problem of squaring the circle. I wonder, Kenneth, if you'd comment. There is supposed to be a wholesale review of Scottish Government support for local authority finance, and for many years in Midlothian under the Labour Group, it was always considered the formula that supports the governmental contribution to our finances was erring on the less appropriate side, but due with demographics and the way in which the formula cut. Is there any sign, any tea leaves indicating that we could have any advantage from a wholesale review of local government finance by the Scottish Parliament?
I'll perhaps bring Gary in on the question of finance. I mean, I suppose my initial comment is there is a local governance review which is to be carried forward. We don't have strong indications at this stage as to what that will cover or the depth or range of that. I mean, in terms of the financial position, I don't foresee fundamental changes to the formula for local government funding. And whilst I think in many ways it's advantageous to be a council which is growing rather than one which is shrinking and is and we are in that position. The problem is that the growth in funding through growth in population always lags behind. And every year at COSLA, there's this debate about where the what they call the ceiling and the floor should sit in terms of funding arrangements. So those councils with falling populations, which would see their funding dropping significantly, that is protected by a floor so that no one loses more than a certain percentage share. And the opposite side of that equation is that those that are growing most don't get the full value of their growth in terms of the increased population. I don't see that being subject to very fundamental review. Gary might have another line on that. But to my mind, the review of local governance has not committed to a significant review of the funding formula.
Gary. Thanks, Kenneth. I would share Kenneth's view. I don't see there being any wholesale reform to the current process that government go through. We are currently sitting in a period where we see grant settlements 1 year ahead, where we're being asked through the report to plan for the longer term. The issues for me are around the total quantum of resources that government make available to local government and the challenges that bring. And yes, the distribution method is complex, but I don't see it fundamentally changing. What we may see is a further ring fencing of resources within that overall quantum. And for example, we know government have come with a consultation last week on fair funding for schools and the follow-up to the education governance review. So between now and November, December time, where we see the 18-19 grant settlement, the Scottish Government publish our budget, as time goes on, we may get an inkling as to whether there's likely to be any change, but I think it would most likely be relatively marginal.
Derek?
Yeah, Peter, I think you're referring to the grant settlement that was awarded to councils when we moved away from the regions and the way that was settled. That's something that sort of has raised its head over the decades. And indeed, the last time that I can remember it raising its head back many years ago was when there was a Labour Liberal administration at the Scottish Parliament, and more latterly when there was an SNP administration at the Scottish Parliament. I think both governments were quite happy to say, well, if you want to review it, take COSLA and go and review it. Because effectively what you were asking was places like Midlothian, Edinburgh, and I think Dundee, there were six councils that were significantly worse off for the funding, but there was many more councils that were actually slightly better off. So every time COSLA was going to review it, there was no chance whatsoever of the councils who were worse off getting their monies. But the government, I think, at all occasions, I say they have no intention of reviewing it, but they would be quite happy for COSLA to come back with the recommendations if they so thought. In other words, the same amount of money would go to local government, and if Midlothian and Edinburgh and Dundee get more, then somebody else is getting less, and we were never going to win that argument.
So I guess the same dynamic applies. We could say, hey, look, we need special treatment because of the amount of infrastructure required for the growth in Midlothian, but we'd still be outvoted by the other members of COSLA saying, well, we're not in that category, so we're not going to see you get any special treatment. Which brings us back to the questions of efficient use of our workforce and efficient use of our assets. No doubt we'll hear more of that in the months to come. Any more questions? Item 5.7, risk management. Chris Lawson. John Blair.
Thanks, Chair. I'll take that report on behalf of Chris. This is the regular quarter report on risk management and covers the first quarter of 2017. It's fair to say it's a moving picture, and in section 2.1 we've set out the key risks that have been added to the risk profile. As we've heard, fastest growing council area in Scotland, the UK decision to leave the European Union, extremely topical at the moment, and the educational governance review which was announced by the government last Thursday. Turning to page 81, in terms of the strategic risks, obviously the financial stability and future budget projection of the council is of paramount importance, and it's important we address that, but also at the same time continue to change the business to meet the fallen funding that will be in place in the next 5 to 7 years. In section 2.62, we outline the change programme, and the Business Transformation Steering Group at its meeting last week confirmed it would be the all-encompassing body to deal with the change programme and the budget deficit, and that will be reported to Council next week. Moving forward to some of the specific service issues which are ongoing, there's the Scottish Abuse Inquiry, which is work in progress. There's a review in pay of grading, which was introduced in Midlothian in October 2016. And there's the need to address the early years, and there's a seminar provisionally being set up prior to the recess. So with these comments, Chair, ask the Audit Committee to note the Quarter 4 Strategic Risk Report, and myself and colleagues will answer any questions if the committee so wish. Thank you, Chair.
Are there questions? On the question of the budget gap, we have to produce a balanced budget by March next year. So any changes to the structure of the Council, given the need for consultation and discussion with the relevant committees, the Council will really need to start almost as soon as we get back from the July break.
If I could answer that, Chair. As I said, no, it wasn't here, sorry. We're bringing a financial strategy update report to Council next week, which will propose the governance and a proposed timeline for the journey through the 18-19 budget to allow Council to set the budget. And the recommendation would be to do it in late January, early February, really to allow billing to go ahead. Although the statutory deadline is 11th of March, the preference is to go a bit earlier on that to allow prompt billing and get direct debits in and maintain our collection rates.
The Business Transformation Steering Group is still in existence. How can we feel as a group here in the Audit Committee that we will get more predictable results from them in the year ahead?
Chair, the governance for the Transformation Steering Group is through Council, therefore by default as an Audit Committee we'll have sight of all the decisions being made. And the historic approach over the last few years has been to bring financial reports to Audit Committee after they've been considered by Council. So there will be assurance for this committee that the key financial decisions will be cited through this particular committee.
Okay, so with full transparency on what's happening there. On page 83, you talk about the review of pay and grading, which we've discussed earlier on today. How will we measure whether we're getting improvements in flexibility which will compensate for the additional increase in the hourly rates?
Essentially, there's two type of measures. We're actually measuring the quantities in terms of reduced premium hours. That's a piece of work that's completed. There's reporting information going to heads of service and managers on a periodic basis with regards to the change in terms and conditions and getting benefit back to the Council in exchange for increasing wage at lower pay. Managers and heads of services have been mandated to introduce innovative changes and come forward with proposals. That's work in progress, and it was made clear that the implementing our workforce or low pay, it would be a 2 to 3 year gestation for the benefits to come back, and that is concentrated and looked at through the Invest in Our Workforce Board, which is chaired by the Chief Exec. So we'll be reporting to the Council and Committee as necessary.
So in terms of when a report might come to this committee looking at the payback on our new strategy?
Chair, I would suggest we get the first year, which ends in September. That would give us a year of financial trends and also time to bed down. So I'd be looking in the second half of the current financial year.
Elaine, is that on your worksheet, or is it about to be on your worksheet?
We do have an audit of delivering excellence on our audit plan, and we have actually started the planning for that audit. And in the 17-18 plan, we have a follow-up audit of the audit that we're about to do. So that would possibly take into scope some of that activity, but we don't have any specific audits on that on the plan as yet. But as I said earlier, the plan is fluid, and if we feel that the risk is becoming greater, we can add that onto the plan and knock something else off.
I think it's quite important we know as a council that the initiative we took has worked as planned. So if it could be included at some point in the next 12 months, I'd be grateful. Now move to item 5.8 at page 113. Mary Smith is... thanks very much. Thanks, Grace.
Thank you. The purpose of this report is to inform the Audit Committee of the actions undertaken to ensure that Midlothian's own DSM scheme actually complies with the DSM guidelines that were published in 2012. Section 2 outlines the background and ideally states that DSM was introduced in 1993, but in 2012 the Scottish Government issued self-evaluation guidelines, a useful toolkit to help us just check, is DSM actually delivering what we would want it to do on the ground? So in November 2016, we undertook that exercise. And we've also concluded that we want to do a number of things. So at the first bullet point on the bottom of page 113 and the remaining five bullet points at the top of 114 outline some of the actions that we would want to take forward in order to strengthen that scheme itself. I would add a word of caution, though, before going to the recommendations. John had mentioned the publication of the Governance Review Next Steps by the Scottish Government, which was published on Friday last week. There is a whole section within that documentation that talks about a national funding formula. So although the recommendation here asks the Audit Committee to note the actions undertaken, what I would put is that caveat in terms of next steps in the rapid pace of educational change, that the funding formula and absolutely looking at funding going more directly to schools and also the role of parents in decision-making at school level is actually contained within that document. Although it was just published on Thursday, we would look to bring that paper to Cabinet and forward that to Council in August.
Okay, I think that's very much a paper for noting, but there may be questions. Any questions? Can we then move on to the review of utilisation of assets held under PPP contracts, page 117? Who would like to talk to this?
Me. This review is a review of the use made of the PPP schools and facilities.